Blog Talk Radio.
I do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever you want me to. Yeah, you have a friend in me till the end. Whatever I can, I'll do for you.
Well, welcome everyone to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com. I'm calling in today from Bonita Springs, Florida, finally back home, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We've got another great show for you lined up today. We've got my co-host, Rhonda Del Baccio, the Story Lady, from ProfitableStorytelling.com with us. Rhonda, are you there today? Oops, I think Rhonda's just getting here. Let's see if I can find her. Rhonda, are you there? Uh-oh. Hold on, Rhonda. I'll unmute you. Are you there, Rhonda?
Hey. Hello.
How are you this morning?
Great. I've been trying a few times to get in here, so I'm glad to be making it here and very excited about our show today.
Well, it took me a couple tries to get in, too, so must be something going on technically.
Yep.
Well, why don't you do the honors of sharing with our listeners our guest today?
I will certainly do that. And today, sorry, I have to put on glasses to be able to see this. It's the problem with having the blind person do the intro. But today, I'm really excited that we have Dr. Barbara Condren with us, and she is, just so many wonderful things. For me to look through all of her accomplishments even and, you know, put it down into a manageable-sized bio for the show was tough because there's so many amazing things that she is involved with that I know, Gina, that you'll be excited to talk with her because some of what she's doing is revolving around peace and about education, so it'll be fun.
Well, I went out and did a little bit of research in advance of today's show, and I was quite impressed as I was doing it. I was like, wow, this lady has achieved so many different great things.
She really has, and I kind of joke sometimes that there are certain people who have way more than their share of talent, and I think Dr. Condren is one of those people.
I definitely agree with you.
Yeah, there are probably half a dozen really untalented people walking around, and they have her to thank because she has their share.
There you go.
Well, anyway, she is an educator, a philosopher. She's an administrator at the School of Metaphysics. She's a writer, an editor, a filmmaker, a composer, an artist, and, of course, let's not forget a wife and a mother. And she has been a lifelong student and began teaching adults the development of human potential back in 1975. And she is currently a professor at the College of Metaphysics in Missouri, which is a few hours away from where I live. And she lives there with her husband, Daniel, and their son, Hezekiah. And you'll notice there are some of her books that are listed here in the show notes today. And she has served as a mentor to people of all ages, including artists and composers and writers. They've benefited from her tutelage and her support in their own creations and their own development. And her affiliation with the School of Metaphysics has enabled her to teach children since 1992, and this has led to much of her work, which is chronicled in How to Raise an Indigo Child. And she has also been part of the school's philanthropic work with talented and gifted children and just a visionary school and so many other things. She's just all over doing really fabulous things. So I'm really excited to have Dr. Barbara Condren, multi-talented person, on our show today.
Well, welcome, Dr. Condren.
I'm kind of overwhelmed. Thank you. Hello, Gina. Hi, Rhonda.
I'm sure when you look at your own bio, do you ever go, wow, did I do all that?
You know, it's only, I'm, what, 56 now or somewhere in there. And it's only been since I turned 52, which I really see kind of as a Mayan time function. As you say, I really am pretty all over the place in terms of understanding the nature of reality and stuff like that, and have dedicated my life to that, certainly. And so along the way, you know, you live long enough and you make good choices all along the line, and you do end up getting quite an amazing resume. And this is really true for all of us, and that's part of what I do encourage and teach in people, and is that you never know the lives that you're touching unless you're awake about it. And so, you know, we meet people every day. All of us do. We meet, you know, at least a dozen people and often hundreds of people in the course of our day. And even with Internet, you know, now it's kind of interesting. We don't meet them face-to-face, but we meet them virtually. Like we're meeting right now virtually. We don't know what we look like unless we see something on the web that says what we look like. And yet we can experience one another. We can share ideas. We can begin to make, to give each other the best that we have to offer and be able to improve ourselves in the way that we contact one another. So the relationship thing is very interesting, and it's developing in terms of what the net offers us and the ways that we can really become a global human race, where race is no longer the color of your skin by any means. It's the quality of the thinking being that we are and how we aid one another. So I don't think about the past a whole lot. Sometimes it comes up, and, of course, certainly people ask for your resumes and things like that. But I have so many irons in the fire right now that I don't have time to think about where I've been or where I've come from. I only have time to live in the now and be the cream of whatever I have done and go forward. So that's kind of how I look at life, which is different. And I think that's probably true of anyone who is, quote-unquote, successful in the outer world. Is they don't sit around a lot thinking about, you know, what they did in high school or what they did when they were in their 20s or wishing that they'd done that or this or whatever. Part of being able to direct and use your mind, which is what the School of Metaphysics teaches, is being self-disciplined and knowing how to develop ideals, purposes for your activity, how to engage that mental power that each one of us have into who we are, how we express, how we interact with other people.
Well, I find the whole topic fascinating. And I know I have not studied metaphysics nearly as extensively as you have. And for me, it's been really the last 4 or 5 years that I've really taken an interest in it. And every time I get the opportunity to talk to people like you, I learn so many new things about the science behind relationships and how relationships can really help us to make a difference and have a bigger reach in the world. So I have tons of questions that I want to ask you about that today, but I want to let Rhonda have a chance to go at it a little bit first. So
okay, great.
Oh, well, you know, I know we both have all kinds of things. And Barbara, I suspect you're one of those people we could just chat with forever. If I lived near the School of Metaphysics, I'd probably be over there all the time. So I am somebody who's been interested in metaphysics for a long time, and yet no matter, I don't feel like I know all that much, in, you know, comparatively, but no matter what, I'm always a lifelong student, always learning something new each day, which is very cool. So I'm kind of curious to know, you said you have a lot of irons in the fight now, and when you are choosing what direction that you should go, what path you should take, what kind of process do you go through to help you sift through the many wonderful options to choose the direction that you need to go?
You know, this is the great dilemma of the Internet right now. With information superhighway, it's also information overload.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Oh, gosh. It tempts me every day. It really is. It's a whole new level that's opening up. I see it as Atlantean, and I don't know if you're even familiar with that, and that's really taking off on a tangent over on the side for some people, so we won't really go there. But it's a repeat of history that is beyond most people's recorded history. Plato talked about Atlantis some. There are records about it even physically still that exist on the world. But when you go into mind, then you're able to actually perceive a greater realm of history and also of probabilities of the future. And so that's really the answer to your question that I can give, is that I try as much as I can to be in alignment with the whole mind, with spirit, some people call it. I call it Holy Spirit. I am a practicing Baha'i-type person. I was raised Christian, and I honor all the religions and the real spirituality of the scriptures that they come from, and teach that and live that in my life. And I am a minister as well in the Interfaith Church of Metaphysics. And I just spoke on a peace panel with 10 other amazing women from religions all over the world. And we were in Melbourne, Australia for the Parliament of the World's Religions. And I was really honored to represent Christianity there, which I had never consciously dreamed that I would ever do that. I had such conflicts with my own faith, my birth faith. And a lot of my journey has been understanding that, coming to peace with it, and coming to terms with it, and understanding that there is a scientific way of understanding spirit and mind, and there's also a spiritual part of understanding it, and that they come together. Art and science come together.
Yeah.
And they only come together in the eye of the beholder, in the reality of you as a thinker and how you perceive your world. Gautama the Buddha taught in the twin verses, the first sermon that he really gave, which is kind of compatible to Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes. You take that scripture, the Beatitudes, and you put it next to the sermon on, in Benares that Gautama first gave when he came out of his enlightenment experience. And it's basically that our thoughts create our world. If we think that the world's against us and things are not going to work out, then indeed we manifest our own reality. If we think that the world is a friendly place and that everything's going to work out and that people are here to help one another and that kind of thing, then that's what we find in the world. And my difficulty, challenge with that was that I didn't always see those happening. And it was because I didn't understand mind. So when I make choices now in what I need to be doing at any given moment, I reference my years of meditation. I started meditating when I was 22, when I started studying with the School of Metaphysics. And that process of meditation is a process of inward listening in the beginning, where you are still, you know how to create a concentrated, focused, still mind so that you can heed the inner voice. Some people call this conscience. Some people call it the voice of God. Some people call it your inner self. Some people call it your guide. There are different ways to describe the same experience. And it is the experience of actually reaching in and accessing more of who you are than just what you can see and hear and smell and taste and touch out there in the physical. And that's also, I think, one of the keys to someone who has a lot to their name or a claim or whatever you want to call it, a lot of accomplishments, is that they do tend to reference inside on a regular basis, if not constantly. They're driven from the inside, not the outside.
Yeah, I knew that was going to be a really interesting answer.
Yeah, well, you know, I reference that. I will meditate about things. I'll pay attention to my dreams. Dream interpretation is something that I wanted to know about dreams from the time I was six. I had a nightmare when I was six, and that launched me on probably if I had to say there was one thing in my life that got me on this path, so to speak, that kind of set the trajectory of my life, it was that nightmare when I was six. And I even teach people that in looking back at what happens, what happened to you in your life between the time you were born and age seven, what you thought about when you were by yourself, what games you played when you were alone, not with other kids, but when you were alone, whatever those are the keys to your soul's yearning and assignment for this lifetime. And what we found over and over through the years in research is that the people who can identify that and the ones who realize that they've been doing that all their life in some form, these are the people who are fulfilled. And they don't have to have a big, long resume. You know, I met a fireman one time, and we were talking about this very thing in one of our spiritual focus sessions that we have here on the campus at the college. And he was a fireman, and he'd been a fireman all his life. He was, like, in his 50s when I met him. And we got to talking about this in the course of one of the workshops that we did on the weekend. He came to me afterwards, and he said, you know, I remember that when I was young, I used to play with fire, and my parents were really afraid. And I would set things on fire, and then I would I would rescue my sister's dolls and all this. You know, it's like he had this whole scenario of what he set up, which, you know, in today's world, some, you know, well-meaning psychologist people would think you've got a pyromaniac on your hands and this is a real problem. It's really not a problem when you have a multidimensional look at the person instead of just looking physically and being afraid. You know, when we can really put our minds to work with each other, then we begin to have insight and understanding that's quite phenomenal within ourselves and with other people that we know, our children. You know, it's very important with children to be able to see beyond just your physical eyes about things and to have more opinions than just what your conscious mind and brain give you. It's essential in being able to create the kind of world that I think many of us dream about. And so that kind of finding out what you wanted between 0 and 7 is a big key to what you should be doing now in your adult life. And it's not always tit for tat. I mean, you know, sometimes it plays out like the fireman where he actually became a fireman. He's been doing that for 40 years, and he loves it. He loves it. He wouldn't be doing anything else. And he's very good at it. And it's because he's following his own soul desire. There's no replacing that.
Right. Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Gina.
This is a topic that I am really passionate about because I so often find people who are not really living in alignment with their passion and with their purpose. And they're kind of trying to go with the flow and doing the things that they, quote-unquote, think they're supposed to do, when in fact it's so not what they really were meant to be or meant to do. I'm sure you see this often with people, too. Can you give our listeners some guidance on what they can do to really find out what their purpose and passion really is, because that's the first issue, and then what they can do to start living in more of alignment with it?
That's exactly what the School of Metaphysics is designed to do. It definitely aided me in clearing the waters and being able to access what I needed to. I've seen it happen in people's lives over and over and over of all ages. The program is designed to teach people from 18 to, well, we've taught people as young as 14, all the way up into their 80s. There are even people who come, Gina, to the School of Metaphysics to learn how to die, which sounds really strange. But when you understand that part of understanding mind is learning how to go into the inner levels of consciousness, which is where we go when we do shed the body. And so we're going into dream states. We're becoming lucid in our dreams. We're learning how to astral project. You know, these are things that are now more and more scientifically measurable. They're not just voodoo kind of weird things and supernatural stuff, even though TV will try to tell you that. It's really not. It's very practical. You know, we all have minds, and we need to know how to use them. And so, you know, that's a lot of knowing what we're to do here. So accessing that inner voice is important. So the 0 to 7 is important. That is a key in defining your passion. Another one is learning how to still your outer mind. And you've touched on that. You just said that you know, people are trying to figure out what they're trying to do or supposed to do, and they're not happy. And it is because they do way too much brain work, too much conscious mind work. My husband's got his message is really still mind, present moment, open heart. He's really landed there, and he's doing something truly beautiful. It is. It's awesome. And he gives people a whole day experience of what it is to have a still mind and what it is to experience things like forgiveness and love. And just, you know, just really basic soul types of energies that are linked to your inner mind. And that's like the gateway or the open door for answering, you know, opening up so the Holy Spirit or the passion can come through. The passion that's you as a whole self, not just you as a fragmented being. So the still mind's important to cultivate. We teach it in the classes through concentration. It's something my son's learning right now. He's 15. He's off and on. We've taught him concentration practices and more. You know, he cycles around. He comes back around to it, wants to practice more. Then he uses it for a while. Then he comes back, wants to practice it more. And that's exactly how life should move, is in those kinds of spiral movements.
Yes.
Well, that's the best way. And, you know, the cool thing is all of this stuff, you can look to science and go, yeah, this isn't just ooga booga ooh-ah stuff. And science really does show that faced repetitious practice over time, coming back to it and cycling back to it and cycling back to it, is really what empowers us to keep growing in a skill set and never to get stale or to lose whatever we've gained.
Absolutely. And you said something, Rhonda, that was so important in terms of a key to being able to live your best life, if you want to call it that. Oprah, I think, still calls it that, one of her slogans, is that you do learn something new every day. You know, the prospect now, especially with the Internet, is clarifying the air that we used to think that you needed to know everything to be an expert. Well, now it's impossible to know everything. You know, the level of information on the net, you can't. There's no way in one lifetime anybody can know everything that's on the Internet. And most of it you probably wouldn't want to know anyway. You know, you have to have good judgment in terms of what the truth is. And that's really where we've come now and will be for probably hundreds of years into the future as a race, is learning how to discern what truth is from all of the different informations that are possible. And the only way we know that is to ingest information, make it our personal knowledge, which is linked to previous experience, put it into our experience so that we can gain understanding. And that's the process we're talking about right now, where you learn every day, but then it goes through this step-by-step process. I taught a seminar for the last 5 years called Powers of Ten, which is going to go up on the net as an online kind of endeavor in October this year. 10-10-10 is its launch date. And it teaches people about the basics of how to direct and use the mind. Everything starts with information that we receive through our five senses. If we're directed outward, if we're directed inward, we receive it from our dreams. And with information, you have to land on what's important. Like right now, hopefully we're attracting more and more people listening to the show. And it's because of what we're talking about. It's because of who we are as individuals. And we begin to gather a group of people that we may never even know that we've touched, that are sincerely interested in what we're talking about, and they want to derive something from it. That's when you start receiving information and it becomes knowledge. It's like what you're saying when I say something, you say, yes, and this is what I think and what I've done. This is how it relates to my experience. Then it's become knowledge. It's no longer information. That knowledge then, we will all come away from this conversation today, and we will take what knowledge we have and we will begin to put it into our experience in some way. If we put it into our experience with a mind, too, how we can grow an understanding, how we can become more whole, more complete, better people, how we can use more of our potential, then we're engaging not only the conscious mind but the subconscious mind, and we're aligning with that superconscious mind. And in that, we begin to work from a point of understanding that we can then become wisdom. We can become wise or reach the wisdom state. So there's actually five different stages whenever we receive any information. And, you know, this is it's very simple. It can be complicated or it can be very simple. You know, this is true when we teach a child what the word apple means. You know, that there are these symbols, these squiggly lines we put on paper, and it's actually letters to an alphabet, and the letters have sounds. And when you put the sounds together, then it means something, and it means this fruit right here that you're eating that you like so much. You know, all that goes through that process for the child. It's first information, then it becomes knowledge because they're eating the apple. The senses are involved. It becomes part of their experience, and they're looking at the squiggly lines, and they even try to make that A. And so then it's starting to become their experience. They start to understand, and then there's like almost an aha moment of, I get it. You know, it's an apple. So the speech comes that they say apple, or they start writing it as they want to communicate. And then there's a certain wisdom as they start using language through speech and through writing. And this is true of anything we want to pick in our lives. It goes through those same cycles. It's universal, the actual learning.
You were talking about something pretty significant a few minutes ago that I would just like to highlight for everybody, is that and we're talking about how so many people just look at what I should do and they like try to think it through with the conscious mind, that asking inside is such a big deal for me. And I know it has really, and when I look back at my life, I can see that all through my childhood, that sort of asking. It doesn't mean that you never take a turn that maybe things don't always come the way you might have wanted or imagined, but that asking inside is a really important piece. And, so if somebody says, well, okay, I'd like to learn to be able to trust my own inner knowing, like should I do this or that, or what choice should I make? What is it that you would teach people to get started, especially if they've never really done it or they've always just tried to figure it out consciously? How are they now going to start looking inside?
What I would first teach, where I would send them is to dreamschool.org. It's one of the websites that the School of Metaphysics sponsors. It is an active website. It has, on the very first page of it, it has what's called Today's Dream. And what we do is we receive dreams from people literally all over the world. Dream School's been up for 12 years now. It's in its 13th year now. And it's a very engaging kind of site that each day we put up a dream from those that we've received and our interpretation in the universal language of mind. Your dreams are your key to your inner self. Everyone dreams. Some people remember more dreams than other people do, so you can learn how to remember them. And we teach that. We give skills and abilities that you can practice to increase your dream recall. Dream yoga is something that the Tibetans have been studying for centuries. And it goes through a process of actually going into the inner mind through using your dreams and through studying your dreams. So what I teach, is the dream consciousness circuit, and this is something that's taught at Dream School. And it's also taught at the School of Metaphysics locations that we have throughout the Midwest. The dream consciousness circuit teaches you how to receive a dream, how to decode its message, because every dream has a message about the state of the dreamer's conscious awareness. That's why we dream. It's kind of like if you'll think of your outer conscious waking mind as half of a whole, the other half is a subconscious mind, which doesn't mean below or under, as in less than. It means more inner, where it's inside, deeper, closer to the core, like you might think about subterranean worlds, which are under the water, which means it's closer to the center of the earth. That's the meaning of the terminology sub and subconscious. So the subconscious mind is trying to get a word in edgewise to our very busy lives, which are pretty much dominated by our brain, our bodies, and our conscious mind during the day. So every once in a while we have these little inklings of kind of psychic energy that comes through because we are whole selves. We may not honor it. We may not pray and meditate. We may not pay attention to our dreams. That does not mean that we are not whole. It does mean that we are limiting our awareness of that wholeness. So what the study of metaphysics and the mind, as we teach it at the School of Metaphysics and at Dream School and SOM.org and the different ways we reach people, what we teach is that you are whole. And so your responsibility is to understand that wholeness and to use it in the light of wholeness, which immediately begins to elevate your perspective of yourself, your choices, how you move in life, how you treat other people, what products you buy. It may even cause some kind of movement in that. So it begins to more and more dictate your life. So your connection with subconscious mind becomes essential when you're beginning this process. As you learn to interpret your dreams and become very good at that, then you tighten up your relationship with your subconscious mind where it becomes a partnership that works very much like relationships in our physical world, in our physical life. People want a mate. You know, most people still today do not feel complete unless they find a mate, unless they find someone that they feel completes their life, that helps them, that gives them the things that they don't have or believe that they don't have. And so we're constantly kind of looking out for a person that we can share our life with. Somewhat that's changing for some of us, that we are evolving and realizing that we are whole, we're not incomplete, so we're no longer needy in terms of our relationships with other people. We're more desirous of people who complement us, people that we can co-create with, people that we can really begin to forge an individual life with, a community life with, and ultimately a global life with, that we can really honor the human race and begin to actually develop ways that we can help. You know, this comes through in all kinds of ways. It came through with the outpouring that happened when the earthquake hit Haiti. And I watched George Clooney, and I like George Clooney anyway. I respect his work greatly, and his choices are, I think, worth following and studying. He was the one that really spearheaded getting the telethon together that was done in a very short period of time, and he mobilized a lot of the celebrity-type people to spend their time manning phones and talking to people to raise funds for Haiti and to also contribute some of their own money. And he was the one that really spearheaded that amidst a time when there were a bunch of award shows for the industry. It was quite amazing to watch how he used his influence and his power to do good in the world and to begin to move energy in a way that is, I think, pretty productive. This, you know, we may not all be a George Clooney's and have those kind of resources. However, we can think that way. And many times you find this in volunteer groups. You find it in churches. You find it in places where people are really trying to connect and they're trying to do better in the world. And they're trying to reach out and help people all over the world. And America is famous for this. This is part of the American spirit. And it, you don't find it in other places. It's a mm-hmm. part of our own Americanism that has made this country what it is in the last 250 years. And it is part of what needs to be sustained. We're like the heart of the world in that regard, where we truly realize a certain connection from maybe the melting pot, from, I think, the ideals of the founding fathers. That's very important, and we want to strengthen that and keep that going. It's part of that circuit that's outwardly showing. And it all starts with how connected are you inside? And how connected are you inside shows up with your dreams. You know, recording your dreams is essential, and then understanding them, because then you've got that inner guidance every single day. Your dreams are your subconscious mind saying, well, this is what I think about what you did with your day today. And when you decode it, it's like, oh, it gives you a different perspective. You dream about earthquakes, you know, which is topical, of course, and sometimes that enters into people's dreams. Well, scientists say, does it enter your dreams because it's in the news, or does it enter into your dreams because it's something to do with you that's important? Because there are people who have earthquake dreams, whether it's in the news or not. So understanding that an earthquake means that there is a major change occurring in subconscious mind. In other words, there are major shifts in how you create, how you manifest what you want. And that's what an earthquake in a dream means. Tornadoes mean that there is some kind of emotional turmoil that you have experienced. If you have a dream about a tornado on the horizon, and in the dream people are kind of afraid and they're running around, and then you're pretty calm in the dream and you find that you just watch the tornado and it goes back up in the clouds and it never even comes close to you. That would be a dream that would be telling you about the fact that you had an emotional turmoil that was existing in your experience, but you never took it as your own. And as a result, you weathered it. So that mm-hmm. might, you know, you might look back at your day and say, okay, I get it. My boss came in. He was really upset with my coworker. I overheard it. You know, I kind of had a temptation to get involved in it or feel for it or whatever. I just remained calm. Maybe I you know, spread joy and light and love to the both people involved, so it became a little calmer with them too, and it blew right over. I didn't get caught up in somebody else's distress. They worked it out fine, so, you know, there it was. And the dream is telling me I did good. It's mm-hmm. telling me in the imagery that, you know, this is what happened. Don't miss that this is what happened yesterday. Because I might have gone through the day, not really thought another thing about it, but the dream makes me think about it again. It brings mm-hmm. it back up so I can reflect on it. This is called self-respect, and this is the first thing we teach in the classes. It's not, you know, self-respect isn't going out there and proclaiming your value or whatever or expecting other people to acknowledge you. Self-respect is your ability to see yourself again and again. Until you can see yourself through 360 degrees instead of just probably the limited picture that at first you look at things with, you know, the kind of limited view that you may have. So your dreams help you round it out. Your dreams help you tell you when you're doing a good job. They'll tell you when you're in trouble, and you may think you had a great day, but then your dream tells you in some way that, hey, you know, wake up. You know, you were sailing through yesterday, but you missed stuff.
Right. Let's just take a few moments for a sort of a station break, and then we'll get right back with you and with more of Gina's questions and more awesome conversation. So hold on for just one moment.
Great.
You're listening to Relationship Marketing 101 Radio with your co-hosts, Gina Gaudio-Graves, Dean and founder of Directions University at directionsu.com, and Rhonda Del Baccio, the story lady of ProfitableStorytelling.com, showing you how to build your business through the power of relationships.
We are here with Dr. Barbara Condren, who is an author of numerous books and is a faculty at the School of Metaphysics. And a couple of the websites, and I will put these resources into a blog post later, but she's been talking a little about some training at the School of Metaphysics, which is at SOM, as in schoolofmetaphysics.org, SOM.org, and then dreamschool.org as well for discovering how to understand the messages that your dreams have for you. And Gina, you mentioned you had just a pile of questions, so let's get to some of those and just keep delivering.
Well, I want to stick with the dream topic here for a minute.
Right.
I'm someone that rarely remembers my dreams.
Wonderful.
Is there significance in that?
Yes, absolutely. The first thing you do is start recording them. Yeah, and if you're a parent or if you're a grandparent, the best thing you can do for your young children is ask them what their dreams are. Listen when they want to tell you. And when you learn how to decode dreams, then you have a window into aiding any person because it gives you a sight that's subconscious, that's inner self, that's intuitive, that otherwise you might not have. It's an amazing process. On Dream School, there's a Dream School Scholar program that people can avail themselves of. It's an online study program where they can learn to become certified as a dreamologist. And that means that they know how to receive and interpret dreams, their own first, and then other people's as well. I have a vision, Tina, that in the future, in my lifetime, I've seen the dawn in corporate America of human resource departments. That didn't used to be. There was no such thing in the 50s, 60s, 70s. I think it came into the 70s maybe, and it got more into more corporations by the 80s. And it's a wonderful way of starting to pay attention to more of the whole person, their health, their well-being, that kind of thing. And I know that within the near future, dreamologists will be on that human resource team, because when you can help someone understand their dream, then you can aid them with their mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual health. And health is so important. I mean, it's in the news, yes, and it's in the news in terms of government stuff. But, you know, it's in the news so that we really reflect on it. And interpreting dreams is a key. It's a major player in the whole movement of health and well-being, and that's so important. Learning how to interpret your dreams is the first step. So you have to record them, because you don't want to make up your dream. And a lot of people, this is what happens to a lot of people, they wake up, they have this amazing dream, they go to work, they are busy, so it's not until they take a break that they can actually talk to somebody about it. So by the time they start trying to talk about it, they either forget it, or they only remember pieces, or they start remembering part of it, and then they make up some of it. And so you've already muddied your waters. When you wake up, you record your dream right away, then you've got the pure message as good as you can receive it. Then it becomes a process of decoding the key symbols in it. We have developed actually the science of linguistics in terms of the language of mind. It is a universal language. It plays all over the planet. We can substantiate that more and more now with our global lucid dreaming experiments and the kind of dreams that we get from people from Indonesia, the Philippines, Japan, India, all over Europe. We don't have many people writing in from Africa, although there are some. And we don't have many people writing in from South America. It's a very interesting function. It's interesting to study at this point, because it's almost like you can tell where the people are on the planet who are awake about the importance of dreams. Throughout history, dreams have been so important in cultures and societies that there was usually one person, a priest, a shaman, a philosopher, who developed and engaged in dream research during that time period. And they would often be the seer or the interpreter of energies that were beyond the physical for that group, whether it was a small tribe or whether it was an entire society. Confucius was invested in this kind of work. Lao Tzu. There are many people around the globe that have used dreams, and there are lots of stories about that. Paul McCartney got the tune to Yesterday, which was, I think, was ham and eggs were the words at first when he woke up in the morning with the dream. The tune was in his head, but not the words yet. But you know, there are all kinds of stories about scientists and mathematicians and warriors and artists and all kinds of people who have had inspiration in dreams. So the value of dreams is a moot topic when you become educated, whether you're talking about history and the, you know, the kind of way that civilization really has progressed and that dreaming has been a part of that, or we're talking about how dreams have changed our lives through people like Mary Shelley, who received the idea of Frankenstein in a dream, and that book has been a bestseller ever since she wrote it, and that's phenomenal for a woman to have written a book you know, in the 1800s. And it was so foreshadowing man as a creator that now we're really starting more and more people are waking up and dealing with now. So personally, when you come down to your personal dreams, yes, dreams can be precognitive. They can tell you about probable future events, not definites, because we have free will. But they can indeed come true. Dreams are always a message about your conscious state of awareness, whether precognitive or not. Dreams will sometimes give you, they'll problem solve, they'll give you the peace that you needed, that you've been looking for. And, you know, maybe you're, I know you do a lot with business with the people that you talk with on your show. And so, you know, they will help you create your business. They'll help you. In fact, there's a wonderful dream story. I'm not that versed with it, but it is on the net, about how Google actually came through a dream. One of the founders of Google, he was addressing, I believe it was when he was addressing, doing a university, you know, how people give university speeches. It was last spring, and he was addressing one of the colleges, and he talked about how he had a dream that he could connect the whole world through messages. And he, it's like I say, I'm kind of clumsy with it because I need to research and I need to get the specifics. But if you'll research the Google founders, and if you'll research university speeches from last spring, that's when it happened. And it may even be on blogs at Google. I don't know, but it talks about the fact that he got the idea for Google in a dream, which is phenomenal. You know, it's like, I just go all over that when I hear that. It's like, oh, yeah, absolutely.
That is incredible.
Isn't that amazing? It's so cool.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. I'll look that up, and I'll make sure that we get a link to that as soon as anyone of us can find it and put it up on there. That is really phenomenal.
Yeah, we need to put it up on our site, too.
While I really appreciate the advice of recording my dreams, I guess that's kind of where I'm stuck in that it's, even when I first wake up, I don't remember enough of it to record it. Is there anything I can do to kind of jog my memory of what was happening while I was asleep?
Yes. One thing that you can do is, before you go to sleep, make it almost like a ritual. And by ritual, I mean that you put full attention on it. So have a particular journal that you use for dreaming. Do you have that particular piece of paper?
I don't, but I can easily get one.
That's what you want. In other words, you want to be very mindful, because what you're doing in this process now, this is the dream consciousness circuit, you're beginning to use visualization powers in your conscious waking mind that you are, in essence, telling your inner subconscious mind that this is what you want. So every action you take, every movement that you make, every choice that you take, in setting the scene to remember the dream is important. So you go to Barnes & Noble or wherever, and you look at all their beautiful journals, or you receive one that you got at Christmas from somebody special, and you say, okay, I knew that I got this, and I was saving it for something, and this is what I've been saving it for. In other words, the more thought substance that you can put into it, the Eastern philosophy is called this chitta. You're gathering your chitta in the inner mind when you're doing this. And so you've already got your inner subconscious mind working on your behalf. And the beauty of this is that in simple form, we found that there's a duty that the subconscious mind has to the conscious waking mind, and that is to fulfill any desire that the conscious mind creates if it's allowed to. And the allowed to is not an external factor that somebody else is going to get in your way. It's that you can get in your way. In other words, you can say, I want to remember my dreams, but you wake up with this obnoxious alarm clock. My son has this right now, and I need to talk to him about this, because he just started the Dream School program, and he's studying the dreams on his own, and he's trying to get his first four dreams down. He's got three, and he's got one more to go before he can go to the next lesson, right? So, and he wakes up with this obnoxious alarm. I mean, it goes into all through the house, and there's no way he's going to remember anything from a dream with waking up with that alarm clock. So you have to cooperate with yourself. That's important. So, in other words, the moral of that tale is don't defeat your purpose, right? So how you wake up is important, too. We'll get to that in a moment. The first thing is to get this special book that's going to be your dream journal, your dream notebook.
Okay.
And the only thing you're going to put in there is your dreams. Before you go to bed, you put next morning's date on the right-hand side of the page. Okay. Then you write down on the left-hand side, you say, it is my conscious desire to remember my dreams. That's the last thing you do before you turn out the light and go to sleep.
Turn out the light. Okay, got it.
Okay. So then that's the last thought that you put into your mind, and your subconscious mind is going to be the part that's going to give you the dream. So if you stay with this, you know, be vigilant, stay with that prayer, because it is a prayer. It's a perfect high seed idea, right? So this is a prayer. You're giving it to your inner self. Your inner self will go to work on your behalf. Then the other thing you have to do is on the other side, on the morning side, pick a nice way to wake up. You know, if you can move your life so that you don't have to have an alarm clock to wake up, do it. In our studies, because people practice concentration and things like that, it gets easier because they're using their mind. And they can use their mind actually to wake up before the alarm clock. And that's a whole other discipline that people practice. And that means that you've got the full advantage of your subconscious mind waking you up. And there are people that can wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, 4:30 in the morning without an alarm clock. And it can be taught and it can be learned. It's not just magic, and it's not just some people can do it and other people can't. The people who can do it, some of them, yes, they do it from past experiences and it's easy. The rest of us have to learn it and have to, in essence, program ourselves to do it. And you can do that. So how you go to sleep is important and how you wake up is important. When you wake up more gently, then you can have that reverie state. The reverie state is that in-between state, where you're both in the inner levels of mind and you're just beginning to be in the outer level. And the more that you sustain that reverie state, you can get the details and pull them into your brain so that then you can have them in your conscious mind. And that's the whole key. You have to actually pull them into the brain. It's kind of like you have to program the computer with all the steps in order for the program to be there for you to use. And the analogy of the computer being like the brain is very similar to how the brain works with the mind. The mind's the operator, just like you're the operator of the computer. You're not the computer. You're not the brain either. So your attention span, your concentration ability comes in here. If you practice a concentration exercise every day, your dream recall will go up. That's why I always recommend, if people can, take the course in the School of Metaphysics. The specialty dream courses are great, and they will give you a lot. And they're a wonderful way to get young people started, like my son. He's 15. He's been around this since he was born. In fact, I was writing the dream.
Can you take the courses without actually going to the campus?
Yes. We have online programs. We have an online program that's connected to the School of Metaphysics study on SOM.org, a correspondence study. And then we have the Dream School Scholarship Program that's on Dream School.
Fantastic.
And that focuses on dreams. And it's a seven-tiered program. And you can also then, once you remember your dreams, when you wake up, let's finish this first. When you wake up, whatever is in your mind, write down. You may just remember red car, and that's all you remember. Do not judge yourself. Don't criticize yourself because all you remember is red car. Be thankful and grateful that you remember red car and write it down. Because red car means something. What it means is that you were probably dealing with your emotional body the day before the dream. So this might mean that you might want to be a little, take more care in how you're working with your body during this day, you know, waking up with the red car dream. So today, be more mindful about how you work with your body. Look at yesterday and see, you know, did I get upset yesterday? Did I overtax? Did I go to the Y and do 2 hours because I didn't do any last week? You know, I mean, what did I do here yesterday that has to do with my emotions and my physical body? Because the car in a dream is a symbol for your physical body. Anytime you have a car, a flat tire, or I had a dream one time where the radiator overflowed, my car overheated, and I had never had that before, and I was thinking, wonder what this is. You know, and so it took me, I actually had it manifest in my body before I could figure it out. The beauty about those dreams is that they'll tell you about your health before it happens, usually, and give you lead time. Usually you have some kind of car dream, a car wreck or whatever, and usually it takes about 3 months for most people to actually manifest that disorder. So in a three-month period of time, you've got a lot of time to turn your life around and to take care of yourself. Maybe you haven't been eating right. Maybe you haven't been exercising. You know the story, you know. I mean, when you have a dream with a car wreck or something and you understand that that means your body's going to be in trouble if you don't shape up, literally, then, you know, if you know how to interpret the dream, you've got that precognition. You know beforehand. You don't have to go through the experience. And that's one of the beauties of dreams, too, is when you can decode them and work with them, you don't have to have every experience that there is to tell you how to do the right thing and how to have a great life. You know, you end up making far less mistakes. And that's because the subconscious mind, its function is to hold the past understood experiences, the things that we've done out here in life and we've gained some wisdom about. We have some understanding of how things work. When we have that function in our conscious mind, where those understandings go and are stored is in the subconscious mind, or what some people call the soul. So this is the part of us that's really more permanent. It's more eternal. It's more steady. It's way beyond. It works way beyond the physical us. You know, it lasts much more than 70, 80, 90 years. And that's the part of mind that we want to get to know. We want to get really familiar with that part of ourselves. And dreams are the first key for that. We have a weekend called the Genius Code, which is all about what we've been talking about here. It's held here at the campus on the College of Metaphysics, and it actually is coming up the second weekend in April. It's very, very close. We do it once a year. And we go into really working this. There's even an intuitive report that's given that weekend for people that addresses the creative mind of the individual, and it goes into how you're using your conscious and subconscious minds in order to create your fondest desires. And so we go into the daydreaming aspect, the visualization aspect, and then we go into the night dreaming as well and teach that dream consciousness circuit. It's a pretty exciting weekend. It's like a kind of like an extended learning environment that's a short course, particularly for people who are very busy and don't really have time for weekly study or aren't too good at self-motivation studies, which is a lot of what the online program is. You have to have be willing to self-study because you don't have a teacher there encouraging you in a class. So we really try to put what we have in forms where anybody, it's accessible to anybody, and it's also tailored to individual learning styles. Some people really like having a group of people to work with and like having a teacher. Some people would rather do it on their own, and so the online program is excellent for them. Some people like to read first and think and really kind of digest it on their own. So we have something for everybody, I think, at this point. It's taken a while, some years, but we're pretty pleased with what we have, and it's getting better all the time.
Well, good. I was just saying, I think it would be all so awesome to have things that are online and interactive because, of course, with technology, that's so easy to do through teleseminar and that type of format.
Right.
I'm kind of curious about something, though, you know, because not everybody in the world has an experience of car. And you're saying
right.
That a car is represented
right.
As a box. Now, for example, I've certainly experienced cars, but I'm mostly blind and I've never driven. And so if I ever do have a dream about driving a car, it's very, very significant because I've never physically done that.
Right.
And there are many, many people in other parts of the world that wouldn't have that experience of car.
Mm-hmm.
What else would relate to a dream of the physical body if not a car?
Excellent question. Because this addresses the reality of the fact that the symbology in the dream progresses and alters as we do, as society does, as civilization does. So, for instance, for someone in China 400 years ago, the car would be the rickshaw. It would be the means of conveyance or the cart. Or, you know, in going back even farther in cultures, the car would be any kind of vehicle that was man-made, not animal, but man-made, that was a carrying device for people. Like, you know, you get back in history and then you get, it's only the royalty that had that advantage. They were the ones that were carried around, you know, on skiffs of one sort or another, or pregnant
right.
women. You know, a skiff for the American Indian, for instance, would be that. A small boat, a rowboat, a canoe would represent the physical body. So depending upon your culture and what the utensils are, the language really works on the function. It's not a tit-for-tat in the way that sometimes people think about it. It's function.
Mm-hmm.
What's the function of this thing? For instance, food in a dream represents knowledge. And this is much easier to see in the universal sense because, you know, food is food. However,
right.
There are certain foods on certain parts of the planet. And now we're becoming global society. So my son was talking about durya, which is this really strange fruit that looks like a porcupine that comes from Thailand that really stinks to high heaven when it's warm, but you keep it cool and you eat it, and it's just like, it is the most sublime thing you've ever eaten. It's like custard. It's like banana custard
mm-hmm.
that is in fruit form. It's an amazing, amazing fruit. And so for people that are native there, they eat durya, and it's durian, and it's in a dream, it means knowledge they're taking in, or knowledge that's available to them. You get into buildings and things like that. A house in a dream, you know, our kinds of houses, and we have lots of houses, different kinds in America, it always represents the mind. For a Native American, 200 years ago, it would have been the teepee. For Native tribal people in Africa, it might have been a thatch-roofed hut. You know, for people in the Orient, it might have been a pagoda. You know, it depends on the function. It's a house. It's a place where you live. So whatever that house is, when it appears in the dream, where you live as a thinker is your mind. And so it becomes, there's quite a bit of reasoning that's involved in understanding the symbols, but more it's understanding a more holistic, having a holistic view of the function of why things are in our world. You know, with technology coming in and the internet and all that, those are becoming new symbols. And they're actually introducing new things into our dreams that weren't there before. And that's part of our studies here at the College of Metaphysics with GLIDE and global lucid dreaming experiments and things of that nature. A lot of the research we're pioneering right now.
Yeah, which is fascinating. Gina, you were going to say something before. What was that?
Oh, now I forgot what I was going to say back then.
We have a weekend coming up, the last weekend in April. Every year we sponsor something called the National Dream Hotline. And it's a time when people can call us. It's not an 800 number or anything. It's just, they just call on their cell phones or whatever phone they can get. And they call the phone number that we post on the site, and we will interpret their dreams. We'll talk with you about your dreams. We'll answer questions about your dreams based upon the research that we've had. And we do that for 54 hours straight. You can call day or night and talk to a faculty member here at the College of Metaphysics and at our headquarters. And we'll also be receiving emails. We receive them all the time on Dream School anyway. But we are going to endeavor every dream that's emailed in on that last weekend in April, we're going to answer. What we do now is we pick one a day and post it. But on that weekend, we make a commitment to you that if you call us, we'll talk to you. And if you email a dream, we will get you an answer or some kind of email.
Wow.
So that's really exciting. We love that. That's a great time of year for us. It's always the last weekend in April. So,
oh, that sounds fantastic. And they can find that at dreamschool.org?
Mm-hmm. And yep. We'll also have that's information good. About it up at som.org, too.
Yeah. You know, let me just pause real quick and remind people how that you can actually ask a question to Dr. Pondran here on the show. And so I just want to let people know how to do that real quick.
If you'd like to ask our guest a question, simply enter it into the chat. We appreciate your participation on Relationship Marketing 101.
I remember what I was going to ask her.
Good.
I work with someone who is a medical doctor. He calls himself an integrative medical practitioner.
Ooh,
and he's both an MD and an alternative kind of a guy.
Oh,
and he is just incredible. He's out of Naples, Florida. His name is Dr. Joel Ying. And I absolutely love him. One of the things that he works with me on is a lot of energy work because there are emotional connections attached to illnesses and things that might be going on with your body.
Right.
And I know he's often talking to me about how my dreams might be playing into getting into more of an understanding of what is going on medically with my body physically. Can you talk a little bit about how the dreams relate to that and how you can use that to even improve your health?
Sure. Since every dream is a message about the conscious awareness of the dreamer, once you begin to record them and you begin to, it's almost like I look at them as personal myths. And so they are stories about us that tell us what we need to know to be whole. And so when you're looking at medicine, it's good medicine, as the Native American Indians would call it, and also as the Chinese people would call it. They have a whole kind of Chinese medicine that has to do with hot and cold foods and things of that nature, and that we really can learn how to work with our physical bodies. And what we work with is the mind, the spirit, and the body, and that's what dreams address. So we talked about the symbol being a car or a vehicle. in our everyday life when it shows up, cars, small airplanes, small boats, all of those will represent our physical body. So in the case of what I think, Rhonda, you were talking about with driving, when you are driving in the dream, then that means that you are in control of your physical body. In other words, you are directing what your body's doing, and that's where you want to be. You want to be in the driver's seat. So it doesn't matter if you know how to drive or not. My dad flies airplanes, small ones, and I used to fly with him when I was very young. I've never flown a plane myself, although he did a couple times put me kind of on, you know, the passenger side controls, but I'd never gotten a license and I haven't studied. However, I have had dreams of flying small planes. And so it doesn't matter in your wake life if you know how to do these things or not. There are many things that happen in our dreams that we would never think about doing in our waking life. We have a lot of people who write to dream school, and it goes in cycles. But we had a cycle last year of many women of all ages, actually, who were writing in, and they were, I kind of thought that in some cases they were probably watching movies or TV shows like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and things like that, or Laura Croft, or these kind of high-powered testosterone-type women who are killing people, maiming and killing people and torturing them. And I had to kind of neutralize my own attitude when they first started coming in, because some of them were kind of graphic. And some women would not be disturbed by it at all. Some women would say, this is not me at all, and I don't know why, it's a nightmare. I don't know why I'm having this. And I watched this flow, and it was talking about the conscious mind, which is the people of the same sex in a dream are your waking conscious mind, and people of the opposite sex represent that partner, that subconscious mind. And then there's a third division of mind called superconscious mind, and those are the people in positions of authority in our life that show up in our dreams. And this is very much the relationship 101 kind of theme, really, as it plays in the dream world. And so the people that appear in your dreams, you have a scene, theme, and character development in every dream. The people will tell you about parts of yourself. Mm-hmm. We call them aspects. They're qualities, they're parts of yourself that your inner self wants to tell you about. So this is why you might dream about your teacher from second grade, and you haven't consciously thought about your teacher in second grade since second grade. But all of a sudden, here she is. The reason why your subconscious mind chooses that person rather than another authority figure, so to speak, in your current life is because there was something about that teacher that you identified with. Maybe it was a very kind person. Maybe it's the kindest teacher that you had. So this would be talking about kindness that comes out of your own superconscious mind, the kindness that you are capable of. And the inner self gave you that message through the image of that particular person. Just like in the case of, let's say when your best friend shows up in your dream. When your best friend shows up in your dream, then if your best friend is the same sex, it's going to be talking about a very familiar conscious aspect of yourself that you're very much aware of. And whatever you see in that person, you know, let's say that they're one of the funniest people that you know. That's part of the reason why you like them and why they're your best friend. So it's that ability in you consciously to not only be funny, but to see things in a proper perspective, to see things in a light manner. And so your subconscious mind, your inner self, will choose to put them in your dream doing certain things in order to convey that message about you to you. It's a wonderful way quite often when I first start teaching people about dreams, I tell them, you're going to learn to be your own therapist. You will never, ever want or need a therapist in your life because you will know everything that you need to know about you as long as you're willing to remember your dreams. And by the time that you're done with the program, with the classes, you will know not only what your dreams mean, but you'll understand why they mean that. You will also understand how to respond to the dream, and you will create a working relationship with your own inner self that will always feed you well. Because just like Dr. Jolang, is that what she said his name was? Like, he's telling you that the emotional connections can cause problems in our life. The emotional mm-hmm. connections also are the root of our success. People who will enthuse what they're doing with emotion are people who actually ignite other people. And you've seen this over and over and over. We call it charisma.
What?
They have charisma. So, yes, It's a two-edged sword. It's polar. But our duty in the conscious mind now, with our evolution the way it is, and we're waking up all over the planet and becoming, you know, so awake now to the fact that life's for learning. And so then the question is, well, what are we supposed to be learning then? What really fulfills us? Then that becomes the importance of the dream consciousness circuit, where you're learning how to manifest your daydreams because you understand your night dreams.
And you just touched on something that I really want to talk a little bit more about, and that's the topic of charisma.
Mm-hmm.
And how, if you're really out there following your passion, you are someone who's generally charismatic. It happens automatically.
Seems automatic, doesn't it? Yes.
It really does. And I'm getting ready at the end of, well, probably middle of April, to launch something I'm calling the 30-Day Passion Challenge. That's really going to challenge folks to find their passion and follow it in growing a business, so
Wonderful.
That they can become more likely to be charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for a lot of folks, this whole topic of metaphysics is one that they go, huh, when
okay.
they hear. So let's talk a little bit more for a minute about the topic of metaphysics and how that plays into your passion and your charisma, and why it's not so much some new age hoo-hoo stuff, but really is a science.
It
so
really
we talk a little
science.
About the science behind it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because, you know, I've lived long enough. I started in my 20s with this, so I've had the great advantage of living through the period where it was, well, it's still, I guess, even in some people's minds, even in today, pre-internet world, this kind of talk was soothsayer stuff and, you know, maybe borderline evil and those kinds of things. You know, it was like you weren't supposed to know things like this. And I watched my parents who were very sincere Christians, and actually I was born into a house where there was a faith healer, an evangelist who was a faith healer, which makes all kinds of sense in where I've gone with my life and the fact that I now understand kundalini and healing energies and why miraculous healings take place and that kind of thing.
Right.
And so I've seen that beginning where my family at the beginning didn't understand doctors. And they wouldn't go to the doctor. And, in fact, my grandmother died because she refused to go to the doctor. And her faith got her to where it did, but then it failed her. So she didn't have the wherewithal or knowledge of how to continue her life beyond that. So she didn't die too young, but she probably could have lengthened her life had she taken advantage of medical science, Western medical science. And so there were a lot of prejudices about that and things of that nature amongst many people in the 50s and 60s. And even into the 70s and even still today, it's a matter of education is how I see it. And I've seen that flip. I've seen my own mother spend the last 7 years of her life in and out of hospitals and having actually a quite wonderful connected time with the people that she would meet there. They got to know her very well, even to the point where she would fix coffee for the nurses because she'd be there for several weeks with liver disease. And so her attitude definitely became educated, and she began to then see that God was using the doctors and that God had given them special talents and abilities that she should be humble and receive. And so mm-hmm. now we're to a point where we've gotten even farther with the interactive or integrative type medical people like you're talking about, which are so important, where they honor the fact that, you know, the cure may indeed be in bee stings rather than in some kind of chemical that a pharmaceutical company creates. And that there might indeed be something to acupuncture that could actually help you to birth a baby rather than having to have a C-section. That we can integrate the wisdom of the world here in wonderful
sure.
ways. And that's really what metaphysics does. Metaphysics is a big word that actually encompasses everything. Meta actually means beyond. It's a Greek word. It's a prefix. And it means beyond. And physics means the physical. So what we're talking about here is all things that are beyond what we can experience with our five physical senses. So we're talking about thought. We're talking about ideas. We're talking about love. We're talking about dreams. We're talking about things like astral projection or visitations from loved ones who are no longer physically with us but show up in our dreams. We're talking about the ability to reason. We're talking about the things that make us uniquely human and who we are. And the fact that we can realize a certain level of divinity and that we can even aspire to being spiritual and divine in our existence. So it's a wide range of exploration because there's so much more to us than the mind. Mm-hmm. We have a diagram of the mind that we use that we divided into the three divisions that we talked about a moment ago. And then within the three divisions are seven levels. This is not necessarily new. It's ancient wisdom that has come across the planet for centuries. But it makes it intelligent, and we can communicate about our experiences and the different levels of our experiences. And so it makes it much more easy to trace cause and effect relationships, where things begin. Part of charisma, I wrote a book on charisma when I was in my 20s, actually, and there are people right now working on making it an e-book, so it can be available again. It's out of print for a while. And it's very short, but it's about when you get down to it, what creates charisma is love. And it's understanding what love is, that it's not just an emotion. It actually is a mental concern, and beyond that, it's a spiritual drive, which is what you're talking about with passion. It's the whole idea of Holy Spirit, which exists in every religion around the world in some form. The Sufi dancers, they twirl, and in the beginning they twirl until they come right out of their bodies. They astral project. And they do that not so that they can be ridiculous or whatever, they might be judged by some people. They do that so that they can experience certain spiritual states of ecstasy, which is really no different than my grandmother on my other side being a Pentecostal, running up and down the aisles during church on Sunday and screaming and singing and shouting hallelujah and the Spirit of God moving through her, where it caused her to actually live well into her 80s, and she never went to a doctor either. She's my other side grandmother. So this is the same energy working through people, and it doesn't matter where you are on the planet. This is the investigation of these things. It's understanding that things like speaking in tongues really does work, and it turns on a certain part of the brain. That the reason why everybody doesn't do it is because they don't have that part of their brain turned on. And the conditions under which you can produce so that that part of the brain can be accessed and used, and it can be understood. And these are the states of ecstasy that great masters have talked about throughout history, and they are within our realm. We have the same basic mind equipment to produce these states. The difference is, what are our choices? Are we choosing to produce them? Do we make the time and space in our very busy, important physical life days to meditate? Do we take a half hour and enter into increasing states of meditative deepness so that we can actually achieve the states of ecstasy? There was a study. I've had the privilege of learning under the Dalai Lama several different times, the Dalai Lama of Tibet. He's a wonderful man, and he's coming in May to Bloomington, Indiana, and I'm looking forward to receiving teachings on the Heart Sutra there from him. He's a wonderful man, and the thing that I love about him the most is he creates an energetic field, a force field, if you will, wherever he goes. And part of it is that he incarned into it, and his whole life story is just amazing to shine light on in itself. And that's probably a whole other show because it's a long story. But it's certainly available for people who want to check it out. When he teaches, he attracts to him a level of high-mindedness in people from all backgrounds and cultures and all ages. And so it's just a privilege and pleasure to be within that energy field. That's charisma of a high order. That's charisma which feeds and nourishes the whole self of the people. Not just, it's different than motivational seminars. I went to a motivational seminar. It's called Get Motivated, and it's wonderful. My husband and I took our then 14-year-old son with us, and he has been investigating, learning how to approach the stock market scientifically ever since. He has landed his ideas of wanting to, he wants to be a millionaire by the time he's 21, and he's on a trajectory to do it. And he's bringing to him the education that he needs to do it. And it's quite phenomenal just to watch his life evolve and to witness it. It's like a privilege and honor to be in his presence merely because of how he thinks. And a lot of that has everything to do with him incarnating here at the College of Metaphysics with the mom and dad that he chose. And I do think that that's a choice. I think the soul makes those choices. I don't think it's luck that we get here. I think it's a mindful choice. And so I've honored that from the very beginning and have endeavored to be the best teacher that I know how to be with him, and so has his father and many of the people who know him. And he's been around some amazing people in his life. He's lived with approximately 200 different people in 15 years. And that's actually living with them, you know, eating meals with them every day and learning from them and being around them. And so he's had quite a gifted, fortunate life that other people would see it that way. However, it's life he's chosen, and it's a challenging life. It's it's a challenging life. That too is part of understanding the mind and how it works and how it functions and what our responsibility with that mind is. It's quite phenomenal what we're able to accomplish when we can be awake and aware and bring to ourselves the education that we need. That is education about the whole self. We can become educated in any one thing out here in the physical. He's learning piano, for instance, right now, and he really wants to learn about music. This is a boy, a male, who when I love music and I love singing. I used to sing to him when he was young. And when he was about 3, he started saying, "Mommy, don't sing. Mommy, don't sing." And it broke my heart. It's like, what do you mean, don't sing? Because, you know, I had to honor what he was saying, and I didn't really understand it. I didn't get it. And I thought, you know, I really wanted to impart music into his life. Well, I did. It's just that he didn't want it then, and it's come full cycle. You know, so a lot of our learning and a lot of our ability to follow our passion and to be able to use mind is in the cultivation of patience. And most of us are not very patient. And that's because we don't have very good concentration skills. We don't know how to hold a train of thought. And I love technology. I love the Internet. I love the fact that I can go on Google and Google something and get a piece of information that I need at my fingertips. I love that. I don't have to, you know, go down to the library and look through all the books and, you know, finally find it 3 days later. I appreciate that. High gratitude there. However, I also realized that if I had not spent years developing my concentration ability, I would be in trouble.
Yes, I agree.
Because I can move on a dime with my mind. And I needed to learn how to harness that power. And this is where I find many people today. They're potential geniuses. And they really can't accomplish anything. But they have to practice concentration in order to get there. It's not just magic. It is scientific. You can train your mind. There's a book that the Dalai Lama helped write, actually. That's called Train Your Mind, Change Your Brain. And it addresses the neuroscience part of what we're talking about here. They did a study. The Dalai Lama allowed seven or eight of the monks to leave Tibet and to go to the University of Madison. This was almost 10 years ago now. And they were doing studies there, and they wanted to study the consciousness of the monks and, you know, put electrodes on their brains and do all the physical machinery stuff of it, which we don't get into a whole lot, but I appreciate it. Other people are. And so they hooked them to brainwave machines. Most of us have 4 brainwaves that are functioning, and they reflect states like being awake and being in a state of reverie and being asleep and being subconscious, where there's imagery and visualization. Well, when they hooked up the monks, they saw another line coming up. I was like, oh, wow, what's that? So they noted it, and they named it gamma brainwaves. And they attested that to the meditation that the monks do. They do a specific form of meditation called loving-kindness meditation, and they practice it for hours. And what was really beautiful about the experiment was that they hooked the monks to the machines, and they saw the brainwave, and they saw the gamma ray. Then they took people off the street who wanted to participate in the experiment, who had never meditated before at all. They taught them the loving-kindness meditation and then hooked them to the electrodes. As long as these people were performing the loving-kindness meditation, gamma rays appeared on the brainwaves. When they stopped, the gamma rays disappeared. With the monks, the gamma rays continued. They didn't disappear. So this is the scientific, quote-unquote, proof or data that says when you practice something over and over and over every day with mindfulness, you get good at it. You do more than get good at it when it involves the mind. You begin to make it a part of yourself so that you no longer have to practice it. This is like what the Olympian gymnasts and runners and swimmers, they all practice. Every day, the ice skaters, you know, the figure skaters, they practice every day so that they can do those 3-minute or 1-minute type of events where it's a world-breaking record, and that's how they got there. They practiced every day. They made certain things a part of themselves. I look at metaphysics as being like the mental gymnastics, the mental Olympic events that we can go into and we can endeavor. In fact, the people that are the highlight of the Olympics are people who know how to use mind. They know how to visualize. That's why they improve, and that's why they get better. You don't get better without knowing how to visualize.
So let's talk about visualization there for a minute, because visualization is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you know my story, but I actually spent 10 years in a hospital bed in a wheelchair. At one point, the doctors gave me 12 to 18 months to live. And I managed to have this wonderful transformation, a miraculous transformation, really, that was caused in a large part by visualization. So let's talk about the right way to visualize and what you need to do to really cause your visualizations to become your reality.
This is wonderful because I call it the crown jewels of consciousness.
And really is.
It's, yes, it is. Yeah. It's one of three. Visualization is one of three. And this is one of the irons I've got in the fire right now, is putting this book together. This was another thing that I spoke on at the Parliament in December at Melbourne. The crown jewels are, and they are in this order, concentration, meditation, and visualization. And it's through all the almost 40 years of study that I've been doing with metaphysics now that I have been able to put them in that order. And in large part, I have the interactions with the Dalai Lama to attest to the order. Because for a long time, I had the order concentration, visualization, meditation. And it's not arbitrary. It really does. One follows the next, and I'll tell you why. Concentration is your ability to focus the mind at will for the period of time that you desire. So it's your ability to practice honing the skill of refining your control of your mind. Of your own mind. There's a wonderful Zen story that there's a young seeker who goes to the Zen master and says, please teach me the secrets. Teach me how to be enlightened. Teach me how to be fulfilled. Teach me how to achieve my greatest desires, my highest desires. And so he spends like all day with the Zen master, and the Zen master shows him, teaches him everything that the man could possibly need or want. He teaches him. And as he's departing, then the young seeker says, oh, I'm so grateful. I'm so high gratitude, and thank you. I cannot tell you what this has meant to me. And do you have any other words of wisdom for me? And there's silence, and then the Zen master says, the only last thing that I will tell you is do not think of monkeys.
Huh.
So the young seeker leaves, and he goes down the mountain, and he starts trying to affect the practices that the Zen master gave him because he knows they'll work. He's seen them. He's seen them work in the master's life. He's seen them with the other people and the monks, everything. And he starts to try to do the exercises, the disciplines. And a monkey enters his consciousness. And then another one, and another one, and another one. And he tries to get rid of the monkeys. And the more he tries to get rid of the monkeys, the more monkeys he has. You know, it's like the monkeys keep breeding. Every time he tries to do this one, he has monkey consciousness, is what we call it. And this is one of the stories that we tell in our lectures or to our students. Because it's so true. It's like, you know, the reality of this is, when you can control your mind, when you can direct it, when you are disciplined, then if someone tells you not to think of monkeys, you won't. It's like, okay, thank you for that. I understand it. This seeker who wanted the quick fix, which is so American, so very American. We want the quick thing, you know, give us the pills, give us the answer immediately. I don't want to have to work for it. I don't want to, you know. We're spoiled in many ways. And, you know, to the degree that we are in our individual collective lives, we have that kind of existence, right? And so we're trying to clean that up now. We're trying to get better. Well, the way we get better is concentration. You have to master your own mind, your own senses, your own body. And so you first have to be able to hold your attention where you want to be. The next step then is meditation. Meditation is a special form of concentration whereby you are practicing what in the Eastern teachings is samadhi, the highest thought possible. So you want to entrain the whole mind in your concentration. You want to first reference the inner. You want to first reference that inner voice, that conscience, that superconscious mind, that wholeness within you before you ever visualize anything. So this is probably what you were doing when you were going through healing yourself, is you were going through these stages. So referencing your inner self, and it's like, you know, why am I here? My mother got a death sentence too. They told her she had a year to live if she didn't get a liver transplant. She didn't want a transplant. She was scared of them. She decided she didn't want them. She said, I'll give it to the Lord, and if the Lord wants me to stay around, then I will. If not, then he won't. So between the Lord and modern medicine, she eked out 7 years, and she lived pretty well in those 7 years. And that was, you know, that was toward the close of her life. She was in her sixth and seventh decade when that happened. And, you know, medical science had given her the death sentence. She said, no, I don't want it. No, thank you. And so she, in her own reality, concentrated, meditated, and visualized and extended her life that long. These stories are they're like yours, you know, and yours is a happier story than my mom's because you've recovered. It's like, you know, you have made yourself anew, and this is the reality of concentration, meditation, and visualization.
Our database has been updated.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and it was truly the most incredible experience I've ever had, and to be able to walk today, even though I have no feeling in my legs and feet, is just an amazing thing.
It is amazing, and what I will tell you, Gina, is that if you want to restore the feeling, you can. Nerves regenerate.
I have already started to. I have about 15 places now between both legs and both feet that I do have some feeling and sensation.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
So it's definitely a process or a journey. It doesn't happen overnight, but it's definitely moving in the right direction.
If you would be open to this, just, you don't have to say yes on the air by any means, but it's something I'll just give you to think about. Is one of the services that the school provides is called an intuitive health analysis. And
really?
That examines the individual mentally, emotionally, and physically. And if you would be interested in that, just email me and let me know, and I'd like to offer that to you. Because it can be part of your healing and part of your growth process. Because if you ask questions, it will give you particular insight into what you could perhaps visualize that would actually speed up the process. And it could be a real assistance. It's almost like a personal intuitive diagnosis, not so much of the problem, but more an instruction manual of these are things that you can do mentally, these are things you can do emotionally, these are the things you can do physically to produce the kind of health, the whole holistic health that you want.
Oh, I will make sure Rhonda gets me your email address, and I will definitely connect with you to do that.
That sounds great.
Fantastic.
Wonderful. Good.
Thank you for the offer. I know in my own health, back when I was still sick, I had 14 different doctors that I would see on a regular basis. I was taking 42 pills per day, 4 continuous IVs per day. I was doing blood work 5 days a week. I would draw my own blood through a portacath, take it to the hospital, wait for the reply, talk to the doctor, see what they wanted me to change. And I did this for years. And what I found after my recovery was that every time I popped a pill, every time I drew my blood, every time I changed my IV, I'm reinforcing mentally, you're sick, you're sick, you're sick. And I kept then trying to do visualizations and meditations to get myself well, but I was always starting at the place of, you're sick, take another pill, now make yourself well.
Right.
And
correct.
I could not possibly make any progress at it until I could see myself differently and I could stop reinforcing you're sick, you're dying over and over again through my actions.
You have and to learn to visualize what you want, your expected outcome, from a place of wholeness. And that's why the visualization comes after meditation, because meditation creates the wholeness, that you are whole. That you know your I am is working and it's in your whole spirit, and then you visualize from that point, and that's the difference between visualizing and pretending. Many people pretend, and it's really denying, and you don't get anywhere when you do that, and that's why people fail. And they say, well, visualization fails. You know, I tried that, and what we're talking about, they have not tried. That there is a sequence of events and thought that you must go through for this to succeed, and you did it. And it is the steps that I just outlined for people. Anyone who does those steps in that order, they will have success just like you are.
Yes.
It's amazing.
And for me, the big difference was that I focused first on what I was like before my accident, before I got sick. Mm-hmm. And I looked at what that Gina would have been like at the time I was doing this had she never gone through any of the experiences of getting into a car accident, getting into the surgery, having this stupid infection. And when I really started looking at what that Gina would be like, then it was so much easier to find a place of wholeness as a starting place in my visualization to be able to make myself well. And it happened so quickly, it totally blew my mind, because it was truly like in a blink of an eye over a couple of weeks.
It's true. It is amazing, isn't it? And that's when you begin to receive it as a blessing.
Absolutely.
As long as you're seeing what's in your life, be it illness or whatever, as a curse, then you are cursed with it.
Correct.
And the minute that you change your attitude and start receiving the fact that I may not understand all the reasons why this is in my life right now, however, I do believe and have faith that it is in my life for a reason. It may be beyond my conscious understanding right now, but it is within my realm to understand it. So then with the practice of meditation, you know, when you practice meditation for a while, you've got that on your side. Dream interpretation, you've got that on your side. You know, your answers come more quickly. And this is, you were leading yourself through that process. And in that, you were able to turn it around very quickly because you paid your karmic debt. You had a karmic debt that brought that illness on, and you weren't aware of that.
Absolutely.
You know? Mm-hmm. But the karmic debt was paid when you moved your mind. And moving your mind, you have learned that you can move your spirit. And, I experience it when I receive what you're saying, that you have revolutionized your mind.
Oh,
and that's
absolutely.
Probably a large part of why you're doing this show.
It's exactly why I'm doing this show and why I do everything I do.
Right.
I feel that I was really given this blessing and that, in a way, I need to pay back what I was given. And so everything I do is all about that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And spreading that message. Wow, this time has just flown by, Gina, hasn't it?
It sure has, and I mean, we could go on here for hours, and I want to thank you, Dr.
Thank
for
you
being
so much.
Here today.
It's been such a pleasure.
And I will make sure that I remind folks at the end of April about that weekend where you'll help folks interpret their dreams, and I'm sure I will be sending in one, because by then I should be able to remember my dreams.
Wonderful, and in terms of entrepreneurship, which is what the show's all about, my son would really... be at odds with me if I didn't mention that he is launching a website called kungfu-chef.com. And it's his manifestation of what you teach people to do all the time on Relationship 101 about following your passion, following your dream, getting out there, being an entrepreneur. And his whole site is dedicated to health. That's why it's a chef. It's Kung Fu because it's how to use energy. And it's right in alignment with our First Lady's campaign to aid children, and we're really excited about it. So,
well, you know,
if throw that out there so people can check it out.
I would like to reciprocate and offer your son a complimentary call with me if I can help him in furthering his entrepreneurship endeavors. I am really passionate about helping kids learn about becoming an entrepreneur and having their own businesses. Because I really believe that kids today are brainwashed to believe that they have to have a job, and they don't need to have a job. In fact, the job is going to stifle them in that they're not always going to follow their passion in a job. In a business, they usually will. So please, if you would like to talk to me and have some insight and assistance in what to do to grow a business at kungfu-chef.com, I'd be happy to help them.
That would be wonderful. I will tell him that. He'll be so happy. He's actually presenting something at a conference in the International Association for the Study of Dreams. He makes films, and he's going to present a film that he interviewed people last year at the conference. He's making a film out of all the, really high-powered people who have been studying dreams for up into their 80s, and he's making a film out of it, and he's premiering that film at their conference this year. It's amazing what he's doing.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
it's
great.
So cool. My goodness. Well, Rhonda, thank you so much for connecting us with Dr. Condren and having her here on the show. We'll be back next Tuesday at noon Eastern for another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I can't remember what I was going to say. I just got blown away by what we were talking about with kids. So, Rhonda, who's our guest next week?
Well, we have a fabulous show on linking power next week with Vincent Wright, and we're very excited to have him. He teaches all about linking up your social media and spreading your presence all over the net. Excuse me.
Oh, that's going to be a great show. I will look forward to that all week, and I hope everyone will join us back here again at noon Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. So thank you again, Dr. Condra, and I will be emailing you later today, and please just let your son know that I'd be happy to help him as well.
I will certainly do that, and I'll have him start studying your show because it sounds like you've got great people on, and he can learn a lot that will help him.
He certainly can, and he can also go to www.30dayimchallenge.com, and that's the number 30dayimchallenge.com. It's a free course on how to use your passion to grow a business. I'm sure he would really enjoy the course a lot.
Thank you so much. Since I, you know, quote-unquote homeschool him, then we'll just make that part of our curriculum.
There you go.
Great. Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Have a great week, everyone. See you back here next week.
Come back next week for Relationship Marketing 101.